Okay, panelists. We're going to have a speed round. And we have a lot of questions. And so what we're going to do, and the timekeeper will be back, I know, we're going to see if these questions can be answered in a minute. I know, but I'm going to guess we have well over 30 questions. We're not going to be able to get to all of them. So we're going to have a speed round of how fast can these questions be answered. I hope David's going to come back up.
Yes, he will.
He's taking a break.
He's wicking his drain.
Yes, drain into it. All right, so are we ready for the speed round? I'm not going to say who these are for. If you want to answer them, say you can take that one.
Okay,
supposing my well goes dry after the installation of these wick drains, can I expect any help from Caltrans, a county, or city? Is litigation an option? Who will take responsibility?
The beauty of groundwater law is that you're on your own.
Okay, less than 1 minute. Okay, being that Little Lake Valley is a basin for winter rains, if we have a 200-foot wide, 6-mile-long berm of fill and large areas filled in the extensive interchange into wetlands as well, what will happen with all that water that would be displaced? Will it cause areas that currently flood to have a higher water level?
I think David should answer that, and he's not here. But I think David
should
answer that.
You've used your 1 minute. I'm sorry.
David is back imminently.
Okay, here's a very, very good question. Are there examples of wick drains and their future, I think, 5 to 10 year results in valleys similar to ours?
I couldn't find any. All I could find on the internet is information on selling wick drains and engineering wick drains and buying wick drain drilling equipment or puncture equipment. And there's nothing in the environmental reviews or the documents other than the engineering, the bid package has a detailed engineering strategy of how to assess the situation when they're out there on the ground installing the wick drains. And there's going to be an engineer and a geologist representing Caltrans out there directing the actual installation. And that's crystal clear in the bid package, so it's kind of an open book. And I don't think there's been any studies in the valley on the right-of-way in regard to what's down there. So it'll be exploratory.
David, this is for you. Being that Little Lake Valley is a basin for winter rains, if we have a 200-foot wide, 6-mile-long berm of fill and large areas filled in the extensive interchange into wetlands as well, what will happen with all that water that would be displaced? Will it cause areas that currently flood to have higher water levels?
Good question. I think that, one of the things that I wanted to make clear was that, is this on?
Yeah.
Okay, one of the things I wanted to make clear was that, what happens with groundwater is really kind of mysterious. You don't really know what's going on there. So, it's pretty hard to kind of make an assessment of that. I did try to do some calculations on the amount of water that might be required for construction, and I don't have any idea about the displacement caused by the wick drains.
Okay.
My conclusion with construction was that it was unbelievably a very small amount of water, even being very generous with the calculations and then multiplying it by a factor of 10, it still doesn't come anywhere close. My calculation was that probably at most, you know, being very generous, it would be about 200 acre foot per year for the construction. And if you compare that to the 35,000 acre foot that's in the ground or potentially in the ground, it's just a very insignificant figure. So.
Okay, this is a similar question, and this is for Bob Whitney. If the WIC drains create cross aquifer pollution by leaching boron and methane from existing valley aquifers, this water cannot be discharged in a salmon and spawning habitat or Outlet Creek. Has the Water Quality Board written a permit for this? It is called an NDPES permit, National Pollution Discharge Elimination System.
I'm sure they have all, I've heard of that type of permit. I'm pretty sure they have one. And they also have a, you know, stormwater pollution permit and a 404 Clean Water Act permit. And all the agencies are pushing this really hard for representatives that twisted their arms. But I would say that there is a good chance of some property owners being victimized by this in terms of groundwater extraction. Their wells might be negatively impacted, and there might be some side pollution coming down from the hills that normally wouldn't reach their properties. They might end up with it. But they'll probably not know for many, many years, maybe a decade or so. And then the recourse and the proof of any recourse would be kind of like the outcome in Cloverdale, where if anybody ends up footing the bill, it would be the city or the county, certainly not Caltrans or the state.
Rosamond, this is for you. At what point did the viaduct get shortened to allow more fill, and how is it being mitigated? How will this affect wildlife and birds in particular?
Well, the viaduct was shortened between the draft environmental impact report and the final environmental impact report, and the reason stated is because the viaduct costs so much. And so it was moved into the floodplain, and that's another place where there's a lot of very complicated culverts underneath. That's where it crosses Valley Road. And when was it shortened, and what was the other one?
When was it shortened, and how will this affect wildlife and birds in particular?
It probably wouldn't affect birds. There'd be a little less places for the swallows to attach because it's shorter. But when they had to move it into the floodway, there is a place, because they moved it to shorten it, the fill is in the floodway right there, and there's a big wall right next to Bechtel Creek. And so they have to take out more riparian, and so that's a place where it would impact Bechtel Creek, and of course, consequently, the trees they took out, all the riparian that they took out there, that's where the impact would be from the shortened viaduct.
Thank you. Okay, Bob, you may or may not know this. What is the life expectancy of a WIC drain, and what happens to them when they die?
Plastic does biodegrade, and it depends on the type of plastic, of course, but it's going to be there for a long time, and probably many decades. And it is a thin plastic with a woven fiber material. And it's in the ground, and those microbes in the ground will be feeding on it eventually as it breaks down. But you know, it might not be there for geologic time, but one thing for sure, it will affect the neighborhood. Anybody that lives in that area will be affected probably by the dewatering, and it'll be essentially a and a collection area for groundwater that will be coming up to the surface. And as you saw some of those diagrams, they effectively act as wells, 55,000 of them. So that whole area, that 1 mile, will be bringing water up to the surface, extracting it from the groundwater, and it'll be impacting the neighbors. And I think it'll be a localized impact, but, you know, if you have property along there and you're impacted, it hits you, and you're the victim. And so that the problem I have with the whole strategy of the WIC drains is that it wasn't studied. I wouldn't be so concerned if it was in the EIR and then some expert said, this is how we're going to mitigate for this these various impacts. But when it's not studied and it's not in the environmental documents, then you wonder, was it a problem that they didn't put it in there, or did they forget, or did I miss it? And so we are going to be officially asking them to Caltrans to elucidate on their background and environmental assessment.
Thank you. All right, real quick answers here, please. We have a lot of questions. Salmon have this could be for you, David. Salmon have just started coming back. How does this project affect them? And the second part, we answered a little bit a minute ago. Residential wells in my area may take years to show effects of water table loss. How will homes and ranches have this resolved? David, the salmon question, please.
I don't think there's any question that it will have an impact on salmon spawning. Exactly what that impact will be, I'm afraid I'm not an expert in that area. The thing that's kind of the most frightening thing that I've heard is that they're going to be dewatering creeks for a significant part of the year, that obviously has drastic consequences. Rosamond can probably talk a little bit more about that than I can. What was the second part of the question?
The second question deals with the wells in the valley. It takes years to show effects of the water table loss. How will homes and ranches have this resolved? And
well, there again, as if you remember that cone drawing, it depends on how close you are to some other well. I mean, so if Caltrans decided to drop a well, 30 feet from your own well, obviously you're going to have pretty severe problems. But it's a matter of distance. Remember that the groundwater flows very slowly. And luckily, the groundwater also recharges in the winter. So if you're close enough that you would have that kind of impact within a few months, it would have a dramatic impact. But if you're not close enough, it's going to recharge and it's not going to have that same impact. So that's all you can say about it. The rest of it's a mystery.
Okay, this one actually is for me. Why are there law enforcement cars and officers at the valley entrance with gates barring access still when resources are scarce with budget cuts for law enforcement? My taxes are not to support the, quote, bully in the schoolyard, Caltrans, unquote, but to protect us, the lowly insignificant citizens. Well, I can tell you that I know a little bit about this, about funding for the Highway Patrol and what they've been doing, and it comes out there's two funds at the state level called COSI and MAZI. COSI is for construction zone safety, and MAZI is for maintenance zone safety. And these are budgets at the state level, which, of course, haven't affected the sheriff's office. Our costs have been somewhat insignificant. I will say this, that last year I approached Caltrans and the Highway Patrol in Sacramento and asked for Mendocino County Sheriff's Office to have the construction zone safety funds for us, and we would take care of all the construction zone safety, and I was told no at the highest level, at both levels. So I hope that answers your question. So will the wicking of the valley have an impact on valley flora in, for example, valley oats, meadow foam, and what about valley wells? Will they dry up? Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay. And this is for Bob Whitney. Do you see Caltrans, do you see the Caltrans relationship between plans for the bypass and the proposed plan for construction of a concrete batch plant on Covelo Road on Outlet Creek, home to the longest coho salmon run in Northern California?
Is there a connection?
Is there a connection between the batch plant at mile marker 2 on 162 and this bypass?
Not that I know of. I do know that there's plans in the Willits Bypass project to have batch plants, concrete batch plants, on the state property in the valley. Well, there actually is, and I'd be glad to show you after the meeting. And so that's my understanding anyway. Of course, I always can be wrong, right? But that's my understanding. I just read it the other day. It's actually in the, I have a, on my computer, I have a map showing it. And then the proposed plant in on Outlet Creek in on Highway 162 could sell rock or concrete for the project. But I'm not aware of any contract.
Okay, we're going to go through six more questions, and then I do want to get to at least one speaker before we have to end here in about a half hour. But has Valerie Valley property owners who have land agreements with Caltrans signed releases for their wells? Was that part of their contractual agreements? You may know that. Yes, Kurt? When they signed releases for their land, did they sign anything about their wells? Does anybody know the answer to that?
My understanding is that Caltrans purchased the properties in fee, including the water rights, unless the property owner was an adjacent property owner and retained those rights. But I think that would be highly unusual. But it could have happened. Oh, yeah, so maybe the mitigation lands would be exempt from that provision, and that Caltrans couldn't use those water wells because they have to use it for mitigation and obviously agriculture. But on the Caltrans state land where the freeway is to be built, there's nothing to prevent them from drilling wells there.
Okay, this is an interesting one. Will the wick drains and construction area be on a fault line, and is there a little danger there?
I think we're on a fault line right here. But I would say that the Mayacama Fault, which is the major fault, you know, going through the middle of the city right here, just to the immediate, well, I don't know, we're probably on it, part of it. And it's just, you know, along Main Street here, goes up through Brook Trails, essentially, you know, Sherwood Road, more or less. But that's just a geologic feature that is the main fault line. And then those fault cracks go out all over the place. So Up Creek, for instance, is a significant fault line. And that goes right underneath the northern interchange. So the answer is yes. There's earthquake fault lines everywhere. And the only way you find out if it's a significant problem is after you build it.
Okay. Continuing on, Bob. This is interesting. But Caltrans has done all the studies. They say it's safe to use wick drains. What's the problem?
They might say that. That might be a good PR move, but I'd like to read it. And I've never seen it in a study, in the environmental documents, for instance. And I've never seen it in an official Caltrans engineering study, specifically to this project. But, you know, you can go online and get all the information you need on buying wick drains. And, of course, it's safe. As promoted by the companies that are selling it. And I might add, it is used everywhere. I mean, it's ubiquitous. It's not like they're just experimenting here.
Do we know if the Cloverdale bypass has Wickerings? No. We don't know, or it doesn't? So John Green says that Cloverdale bypass does not have Wickerings. Okay, where Caltrans is cutting trees down, do we know if they've mitigated for the impact of this water runoff?
If there's water runoff?
If Caltrans has cut down trees, we all know that. Uh-huh. Do we know how they've mitigated for the impact of water runoff?
They certainly quantified what the water runoff was. The trees have been cut down actually in the footprint, and so a lot of the footprint is impervious. That's the pavement. And then the sides of the footprint are not impervious, although it's compacted. So, it's there. But it's in the floodplain study, and it doesn't raise the floodplain. That's what they studied.
Okay, this is a long question, and I'm going to have to read it slow because of the handwriting. I'm sorry. Raymond Francis, a chemist from MIT, has done extensive research on the chemicals in plastic. He was very ill in his late 40s, and by totally hanging all the food and liquids he ate, he became very healthy. By changing all the food and liquids he ate, he became very healthy in 2 years. He is now 70 and has none of the common illnesses, medical care, hospitalizations, and medications that afflict our population, and he's not obese either. His theory is that all our diseases come from wrong and inadequate nutrition and from the toxins we ingest, inhale, and otherwise put into our body. He states that flat out don't store, package, or carry of your organic food in any kind of plastic, and it will leach out in infant intestinal system. I'm sorry, the handwriting, I apologize. He states plastic water bottles, same effect and so forth. So here's a question. The question is the water, the wick drains, how will the leaching of the plastic affect our fish in our valley?
I wouldn't drink a well water right next to the freeway. And I think anybody that did would be, it'd be kind of like if you live next to Remco or some of the, toxic, hexavalent chromium that was dumped all over Willits area. But those people that are victimized like that, don't know it, of course, until, a few of your relatives die and you conduct studies 20 years later. So, but yeah, I think if everybody should be testing their wells. That's pretty obvious, particularly if you live next to a construction site like this.
Testing your wells for what?
It's expensive, but testing it for hydrocarbons and chemical derivatives.
And herbicides.
Oh, and herbicides.
Yeah, the herbicides. That could get into the whole system.
Okay, there's a question, where is a proposed roundabout located? On the back table, there's a roundabout bypass map there. How will our water supply be affected during a drought year?
How will what be affected?
Water supply.
During a drought year. Are we talking about during the construction or afterwards?
Well, I think right now we in Willits we probably have a drought every 18 to 20 years. And so the question is fair to say, will we have more droughts? When we do have a drought, will it be more severe? Or will it be the same?
I can't see. I'm a jack of all trades and master of none. So I'm not an expert about this, but I would say that my gut feel is that no, it would not dramatically impact the likelihood or severity of drought.
Okay.
And I don't see that relationship.
Where will the water go, actually, during a flooding year?
I can answer that one.
Okay.
The FEMA flood maps that I showed, that showed the where the floodway is. and then the map is in the back here. You can look at it again. The culverts that are underneath the bypass, some of them they quantified and they're very sure about. Other ones, they're not so sure what exactly will happen. And one of them is at the south end of the viaduct, and the other is at the north interchange, where the FEMA map has changed since they did their study.
Okay. How will this affect wells in the valley, the wicking? So when I looked at the slides up there, the wick drains were on the north end, and they ended at the sewer plant, right? Mm-hmm. The new sewer plant.
The railroad.
The rail, yes, in that area. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So will it affect just the houses in that area and businesses in that area, and will have any effect on the southern part of the bypass? So how will this affect the wells in the valley?
Yeah, I think it's a localized effect for the immediate property owners adjacent to the wick drain areas. I don't see it being a valley impact, except it's not been studied. So the problem is that we're just kind of wild guessing based on our ignorance, and that's not adequate with a project of this scope that could go on for another 15 years, by the way, and cost hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. So it seems like it. Hopefully we'll get some answers soon. Remember now, this has just come to light in the last few weeks. It's not like we've known this for years, and we're just beginning to understand the implications of it. And if anybody has any expertise in this area, we'd really appreciate, Sabre, Little Lake Valley would really appreciate you stepping up and letting us know.
Bob, is installing wick drains a noisy process?
Only if you live next door. But I would think at night. Remember the pallet mill when it was operating? I live up in Brook Trails, and I mean, don't get me wrong, I like money, and I like the sound of money, and I like the mills, and I like the whistles and all that. But and that's part of living here in the rural community. But I would think it'd be very disconcerting if you were living in a sound range of those. The pile driving, of course, is going to go on for another 3 to 5 years, and the wick drain vibrators and installers, and of course then all the heavy truck traffic. And so if you live in town, you're going to be directly impacted, particularly those people that live on the east side of town.
All right, we're tearing through these. We might get to all of these. We can keep our answers as quick. That was a good answer, but we're just going to do a speed round here. John, you may be the person who knows this, but is Caltrans the largest landowner in the Little Lake Valley?
2,018 acres, I think.
That's pretty obvious.
You think they're the largest landowner?
In the valley.
Okay. Reference to wick drains, when and how are they removed? I think I've learned that they're not removed and they just slowly fade away.
Just like sheriffs.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for that, Bob. Okay. Wow. I'll put my reelection sign in your front yard, too. Okay. Do we know how long and for how long the wick drain hydraulic punch will take to complete?
They estimate that if it's really clicking along, they can put in about 4,000 some in an hour, I think it was. It's like a sewing machine. Chunk, 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 chunk. That's a beautiful sound, isn't it? I have no idea. I can't imagine it wouldn't be quiet. It'd be like a logging operation. And the other thing is that it does say, though, that if you hit some type of barrier underneath, like a floater rock or some kind of a soil barrier, that you might have to bring in a drill because they don't want to skip a wick drain if it's not actually hit the bottom of the gravelly soil. So they want to make sure they've hit the bottom there, wherever that is, 80 feet down or so. That's what they estimate. But they might have to go deeper. It might take a little longer. They might get stuck in the mud, like you saw some of the equipment. So, you know, if it's really clicking along like a sewing machine, you know, four or 5,000 an hour, but you might get slowed down. And that's the way life is a lot of time.
Okay, Rosman. Are there any toxic waste sites that might be invaded or avoided by Caltrans? If so, who pays for cleanup?
Caltrans is required to do hazardous waste. There's a whole section on looking for hazardous waste, and they all came up negative, but I don't know what their threshold was. I know when the REMCO, there was a lot of talk about REMCO waste being all over town, and they established a threshold that if it was this toxic, they considered it toxic. If it was this toxic, they didn't consider it important. So I don't know what Caltrans's threshold is. I didn't study that. There's certainly, they did come upon toxics, but they didn't, they're not significant. Although I've heard of a lot of things that are not significant that I didn't agree with, that's not a subject that I've really studied very hard. And while I've got the microphone, I wanted to talk a little bit about the wick drains. One of the questions was in our valley, how it will affect. And I read in the Willits News about an engineer who said that there hadn't been any problem in the Bay Area when they used wick drains, especially on the, I think, the eastern end of the Bay Bridge. And I just wanted to point out what a different environment that is, that there's a bay right there, that the groundwater is completely different from what we've got here. So an engineer may say that, but I just wanted to kind of remind people that that doesn't mean an engineer would say the same about this valley.
Thank you. This is interesting. Has there been a well canvassing survey planned or in place to detail wells of valley residents? I mean, study the Caltrans surveys on wells. Is there one?
They certainly didn't study anything that wasn't right in their footprint. Do you know? Yes, please.
So for the recording people, what John Ford has just said, that for the past 40 years, there are 17 wells that have been tested on a biannual basis by the state, and the state does have those records. Can I assume when they test them, they're testing for content of the water?
That's the main thing.
Okay. Okay, do either the amount of wick drains or the depth, any kind of industry average? Is it unusual? Do we know?
Yeah, actually, I might have been wrong on that 4,000 wells placed per hour. I think it's 4,000 meters of the wick drain. And in response to, there's... You can look at the examples in here. I mean, they install these wick drains all over the world, and I don't think there's any average. It's always dependent on the project. And, out of the 6 miles of this project, there's about a one-mile stretch on the northern end on both sides of the northern interchange where these would be wick drains would be installed. So it is a... 1/6 of the project area, and but the problem is they don't. The engineers really don't know, and they admit this in the bid package that they don't know how much they're going to the wick drains are going to have to put in. They don't know the depth. They don't know how many exactly. They don't know the spacing. It's all going to be determined on the site as they install it.
Hey, Bob, does water drain in wick drains both ways? Does surface water go down to the deep well water, or as well as deep well water come up to the surface?
Depends on the level of the groundwater. I think the way I understand it, it acts just like a well. So if the water's down below there, the pressure of the soil and the the water coming in from the sides, from the groundwater from the sides, will push the water upward to escape that pressure. That's the only thing that's pushing it up, by the way, because there's no pumps down there. So it's going to naturally drain up these plastic straws to the surface and then horizontally be drained to the side and out of the construction area.
So it wouldn't siphon ground surface water with chemicals into the deep water. Okay.
No, I don't think so.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, and this could be for Rosman. Why does a final environmental impact report skip Little Lake Valley and wetlands impact in the table of contents and in the report?
Well, I didn't notice that, so I can't tell you why. It was probably a typo, because there is there's a lot of the studies in the final impact report are actually in the draft impact report, which is volume 3. So if that's the confusion, that might be part of it.
Okay. What level of pollution does the soil of Oil Well Hill have?
I don't remember seeing any.
Okay. And Oil Well Hill itself is literally, I would imagine, 3.5 miles from the far northern end of the bypass, right?
That's
right.
Correct. And the contractor has not indicated that they're going to use that fill at this point. This is okay. What the water board told me.
Why will Caltrans fill first and then dig a well? How far apart are the drain pipes?
Fill, they're...
I just read them.
Okay. I think first they have to compact the soil that's already there, and they may be filling... I guess they can't fill at the same time because that would cover up the wick drains. So... the wicks go in first, they collapse the soil that's there, and then they add soil on top of that. No?
The wicks first, then you put the soil on top, put the pressure. That's the weight that drives the water from out.
So Linda Williams said...
The wicks drain out through the horizontal drainage. It comes up vertically, and then it drains out to the soil.
So there's a difference between a wick well and a wick drain are two different things. A wick well attaches to a wick drain.
No, there's the official sales term in the marketing literature and the Caltrans project is wick drains, and they're both vertical and horizontal. And the word wells are used for groundwater wells for supply of the construction project.
Okay. I don't know if past tense is wicked or wicked. Anyway, why does Caltrans want an interstate freeway running through our valley? And I think that most of us know this has been talked about since 1954. In 1954 was the first article of a bypass. That's what my understanding is. Ed Burton, who's passed away several years ago, talked about the headlines of the Willis News in 1959 that said Willis bypass funding secured. So does anybody else have another answer? Why does Caltrans want an interstate freeway running through our valley?
Yeah, I have a quick answer. It's in the plan. It's in the California State Freeway Plan to have a freeway all the way from on 101, Highway 101, from the Mexican border to the Oregon border. Well, we can deal with San Francisco when the time comes.
All right. And I think this question was answered earlier, why so much law enforcement around this project when most law enforcement budgets are slashed. It's California Highway Patrol. I was not included in any kind of meeting there. It's just they're the state. What several years ago, the state police was consolidated into the Highway Patrol. So what I'm saying is the Highway Patrol is the state police. And this is a state highway project. So, all right, question. What will be done to mitigate noise from pile driving for the bypass?
There won't be any mitigation for noise for pile driving from the bypass. It was considered insignificant. Temporary, yes.
Will wick drains ever be capped? or will they just as they are?
Yeah, there. Linda was correct from the Willits News. They'll be buried mostly. The vertical wick drains will be buried under the fill dirt with a freeway on top. So that's, and you remember in this phase one, they're building both all four lane fill will be placed, not just the two lane. Correct? Everybody, who agrees with that statement? Raise your hand. Okay, you're outvoted.
There's 8 acres of phase two fill that will be placed during phase two. All the other damage is done during phase one. They're building the entire intersections for both the north and south intersections. They're filling both intersections worth. There's just this long sliver to make it a little wider for phase two in the center part.
So that was, as usual, 80% correct answer.
Luke has a question in the back.
Just to add on to that, if you do want to see that, if you look at the map that's back here on the...
Yeah, so to get back, thanks, Luke, and to get back to the question, I'm not sure about the horizontal drains. Those might be temporary, because they're not going to be filled extensively. They might have a little side fill on them, but it seems like, you know, those could be temporary and then pulled out. But why pull them out? If it's on state property, it'll probably stay there.
Will wick wells affect septics and leach fields?
It might affect wells if you're right next to the project, but... you better not have a leach field next to the project. I don't think, if you live next to the project, you're going to be impacted multiple ways. So, yeah, you're going to, wick drains and wick, and the wells will probably impact your groundwater, that's for sure.
Okay. There's a question regarding why can't Caltrans restripe in front of Safeway in 2013. I don't think anybody in this room has the answer to why Caltrans can't restripe in front of Safeway in 2013. Does anybody have that answer?
Well, Phil Frisby said they can't do it until 2013 because it requires engineering. It's a huge project that's going to take, like, I forget how many millions of dollars. That's just the way it is because it's that little box.
Okay, so as for now, the restriping is scheduled for 2014. Okay. I'm sorry, there's a question in here regarding the name of a person who owns a construction company and comparing him to a Nazi. I'm not going to read that question. I apologize. Salmon are on the threatened and endangered species list. Trees removed from riparian streamside watersheds mean warmer water. Salmon cannot live without water. CEQA, California Environmental Quality Act, requires cumulative impacts, growth... loss of prime agriculture land, and why are CEQA and NEPA laws not being enforced? Who pays for risk damages when flooding earthquakes occur? Long question. Who wants to take it?
Well, I'll take a piece of it. I don't think I can remember the whole thing. the way the salmon are protected, there are threatened and there are endangered. And the coho are endangered. The other, the steelhead and chinook, are threatened. And so different agencies, the Fish and Game, for instance, has an incidental take. You can go ahead and take, which is anything from scare them to actually kill them, if you mitigate. And so all the agencies considered the mitigation sufficient. And that's one of the things they're going to improve Ryan Creek. And in order to be sufficient, you would have to cause the coho to actually, the whole section of the North Coast coho, which is not just in Eel River, to go extinct before you could consider this a really bad thing. So it's a really strange way the laws are written. The coho could be completely extinct in Little Lake Valley, and they still couldn't say that you have made this whole section of North Coast coho extinct. So they can't keep Caltrans from doing that. So we could lose our coho, and they could be... In Ryan Creek, they do spawn in Ryan Creek, which is north, but right now the Ryan Creek fish passage, which opens up a big piece of Ryan Creek, that's being delayed. It was supposed to be done this fall so that the coho would have somewhere to go. And when the valley is full of construction, it's going to be very hard for a coho to survive.
There's a question regarding a lawsuit, and without getting specifically in the lawsuit, I would encourage the author of the question to contact the table at the end there in the back, and they're the ones who are coordinating the lawsuit. So let me tell you what's going to happen now. We're going to have some question and answers, and I know that John Ford, as we've been told, John, that you are not to be timed. You can take as much time as you want because it's very appreciated that you're here. Charlene said, watch out, be careful. But I
John, you're getting set up, John.
I apologize. I had pre-obligated myself for a fundraiser for Boys and Girls Club tonight, and I have to slip out. But I want to tell you about a conversation I had with a sheriff about a month ago when he said, what is it with you people in Mendocino County? Why are these tree sitters and protesters? And I, as you know, I haven't told you where my side is, and I'm not going to, because I'm your sheriff, and my role is to be center of the road, and I'll be the peacekeeper. But I answered him back by saying, I would have been greatly disappointed if a major project had come through our county and there hadn't been a protest. So what I'm... What I'm saying is, no matter where the cards lie, no matter what's decided, I want you to know, as long as we keep talking about it, we're going to get the answers. And I've been in this valley for 28 years, and I plan on being here 28 more years.
Yes.
And I want you to know that I appreciate you as citizens to say, I just have questions, and I want to politely ask the questions and get the answers. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you for spending your Sunday afternoon with me, and I apologize to have to leave.
It's live.
I don't know what anybody wants to know, but if I can answer your questions, I'll try.
Maybe if you could start with what your perspective is on the bypass and its impact on you.
So far, the bypass has not really affected us up. So far, the bypass has not really affected us a whole lot. Caltrans has said they're going to do this and do that, and we've just basically said, well, go ahead and do it, and then we'll see what happens. But they haven't violated any of our contracts or anything to date. So we conceded one piece of ground, which we kind of understood in the beginning that we were going to have to forego on. But we're still using it. We will use it until sometime this year. And that's to show, basically to show good faith, to cooperation with Caltrans, so they can show good faith efforts towards the Army Corps of Engineers. But it's not a big chunk of ground. There's two, one's a little sliver that it amounts to 5 acres that's right on the north part of the town, or the north part of the freeway, or the north part of the portion of a property that we sold to Caltrans, but Caltrans has done nothing to protect it. They have done nothing to protect even the 80-acre piece that they want to remove. So all I can say at this point from my perspective of Caltrans, what I've seen is pretty dysfunctional. So
I have a question. I was wondering what you think of their grazing plan.
I have not seen the final grazing plan yet.
What do you think of rotational grazing?
Well, I don't have a problem with that. We've been doing that for 30, 40 years. I mean, we followed Alan Savory's holistic grazing practices, and well, that's basically what rotational grazing is, and it does work. Like my grandfather said, he said your ground is no different than your body. You work it real hard, you give it its rest, and it'll continue to get better and better every year. So, and that's, we've done that for years and years. It's not a new thing. It's, in fact, Alan Savory with holistic management, he derived that from watching the animals in Africa, and it's really the same thing. My grandfather learned it from watching how the buffalo, well, not he didn't, but his dad, how the buffalo herds roamed this country many, many years ago. So, and it's all the same thing.
What about the channel maintenance that's going to stop? What are you thinking about that?
Well, the only thing I can say there is that I was out there yesterday doing some assessments on some other things, and you can might as well forget about your fish population, because there's a couple of channel or a couple of blockages out there that are, I'm going to say one of them I haven't. One of Charlene and I were at yesterday is probably 250 feet, and the channel is just totally blocked full. But one thing, in all truthfulness, we really need to be careful. What we can blame this on the channelization, and I'm not disagreeing with you, Rosman, but we as individuals have to look at ourselves. I mean, we go back 100 years ago, there wasn't the amount of people in this vicinity, and as we put down more rooftops and more asphalt and more demand on our upstream water supplies, whether it's illegal activities or legal activities, we need to be more water conservative. And then the junk, people are just absolute hogs, the stuff that they throw in the creeks. I mean, I've got pictures that showing you literally thousands and thousands of tires that came down the creek a number of years ago. And we took those out when we did the work with, in conjunction with the Fish and Game back, started in the early 80s. We've done the work up until continually for up to 2 years. We quit going through the grant program because they wanted us to do a CEQA document, and I told them that was a waste of time. I said, just give me the permit and we'll do the work. So, and everything we did do was sanctioned with Fish and Game. We had the 1,600 permits in place, but the valley is going to lose its definition as far as creek or fish passage, because the channels, if you don't maintain them, forget it. It won't work. Well, basically, right now, I think it's Joanne Dunn, who's the gal that took Craig Martz's place with Fish and Game. She said, well, she wasn't even aware of it. And so I don't know, but I went through the proper channels, but this point I'm gonna go through the proper channels this time. And then some of it's not all Caltrans ground. One of these big blockages is on a piece of ground that we lease, and we'll go in and take it out this summer, because we have to do it under emergency provisions. And the stuff that's further north, that is on Caltrans property, and that one is huge, and that's been there for over 2 years.
Can I suggest here that what we could do is have people now, we're going to have more of an informal talk now that Sheriff Allman's gone, and have them come up here so that the videographer can get this on the, have you come up here to ask your question of John? And before we do that, I just want to thank everybody for being here, first of all, and the great, great questions that were asked, and maybe some of them not answered. So we hope that this will continue. The knowledge just of out there and up here, that these forums will continue in the future. And we also want to give a really, before we ask, have you come up here and ask questions of John, or just to informally talk with each other, really thank the videographers and also Kyle Madrigal for bringing the whole sound system here today. So thank you so much. Anybody have a question for John? Just come on up and put it right here.
Or we can have questions of each other or discussion, if anybody would like.
Hi, I'm Judy Burtis. I was have two questions, and one is, I have a well in downtown Willits that's 50 feet deep, and I was wondering how deep your wells are on your property, John. And the other thing I was wondering about, I'm really interested in the unstudied off-site dumping sites for Remco hexavalent chlorine 55-gallon drums, because I know the ones in the depository where they look, where they studied some of those, but there are reports by people who work at Remco, old Remco workers, of sites that I keep hearing about, you know, and I'm just aghast. One of the sites is under 101, where the four lanes, at the south end of town, where the four lanes turn into two lanes, which was close to the Warbler tree sit site. And I'm just wondering, when they start plowing up that ground and piercing those 55-gallon drums, what's that going to mean for the water drainage and runoff? And if you have any knowledge of the off-site Remco illegal dumping sites in the valley?
No, I don't. That's above my pay grade. But but I really don't. The only one I knew about was the one that was up
Page,
yeah, Wilson Page's. That's the only one that I ever knew about. And, well, and then Luther Sherburn, who we bought our place from, he was here for years and years and years, and he shared a lot of stuff with me that took place, and that's the only one that I'd ever heard him make reference to. And he was an old-timer here, so he would have known. If you wanted to answer your question, probably the best person to be to talk to would be Lee Persico. So, because, see, we've only been here since, I guess, since 1980. We lived in Covelo for 7 years before that, when we came from Humboldt County. So a lot of the old history, I don't know. But I do know the creeks were all dead when we first started doing the work in the early 80s, and that was through Department of Fish and Game. Yeah, there was no fish passage at all, totally dead, and that's what will happen again, because we can go back to the twisty-turny deal like Rosman, which was a good presentation. But the thing of it is, we're dealing with a different upstream community than what we did, say, 100 or 50, 60, even 20 years ago. I mean, I can remember when we came here, the Evergreen Shopping Center was a swamp. And now it's all covered up with asphalt and rooftops. So, I mean, these are all things that water does not have a chance to perforate into the ground. And I've studied a lot on this deal, and David and I've had quite a few conversations about it. I'll tell you, Oregon is leaps and bounds ahead of California in dealing with groundwater. I mean, if you put in a shopping center up there, you have to have, I don't know what the specs are, but you have to allow so many open spaces for the in a parking lot that water can run off and go in and circuit, go down into the ground. Whereas here, it's just all solid blacktop. And it goes into a drainage system and goes off and shoots off into a creek. So, and it's not just that. There's Pine Mountain. There's brook trails. Every time you build a road. So.
John, this question is for you. As a organically attending farmer, rancher, what is your concern level about this new pesticide herbicide application that's projected?
Well, I'm not so sure that's going to fly. They can talk about that, but if they're going to do that, a lot of that can be eliminated with the holistic grazing method. And that's a conflict, I think, in the settlement dealing with Farm Bureau. And in definition of this, too, I kind of disagree with the Phil Frisbee statement that came out. The way I understand this, this is a current press release, but the judge has not written what's to come out of the mediation yet. So we really don't know. But these are the guidelines from... Caltrans is supposed to work diligently to protect the farmland, because really the MMP is a joke if it doesn't work, and it needs to have a workable grazing plan to keep the MMP in place. So I don't know if I really answered your question, but I hope I did. Pardon? It's a mitigation monitoring proposal. And it's a document about that thick, and there's a lot of inconsistencies in it. It was written, I'll just say this, and I've told Caltrans this, it was written by Caltrans personnel. I knew a lot of the consultants that did the work on it, and I got after them because they came through our property. I said, well, why'd you put that in there? This is what they said. They said, that was not our language. We presented the facts, and then Caltrans put their spin on it, and that was so they could basically satisfy what the Army Corps wanted. So, I mean, and that's my perspective. So, but it was really derogatory to agriculture. So,
I have a question. I've been looking at the EIR and the Environmental Impact Report, which was prepared by Caltrans and the Federal Highway Administration. So it looks like the folks who are in charge of all of this analysis about our wetlands and water are the people who are going to benefit from the highway, which has seemed like a conflict of interest. And as you are experiencing this and studying it over the last few years, and your conclusion is that Caltrans is dysfunctional, and we're about to submit ourselves to 4, 6, 15 years of their dysfunction potentially. What is your idea about how we should be handling this as a community? Of course, there are many different ways we've been trying to approach this, from tree sits to getting arrested to educational forums. What's your idea about how we should be dealing with Caltrans?
Well, I think Bob should answer that question.
Well, the Farm Bureau, to their credit, and that's why I'm a proud member of the California Farm Bureau, is that they sued Caltrans and joined the lawsuit of the environmental groups. So I was very, very pleased to see that. I hope the settlement details do protect the agricultural resources of the valley. I'm quite frankly extremely concerned about the management of the 2,000 plus acres. That was not studied in the EIR. I think that's a huge impact on our valley. When you essentially change private land to public land, that's a big step of that nature. And I've seen what happens in other cases with private lands like the National Forest, et cetera. And you can see where if the budget goes down, guess what happens to management?
But I want to add one other thing on that. Well, I will say this. There's one thing that really upset me way back, and nobody's answered this. We did baseline studies on plants. We did baseline studies on fish. We did baseline studies on water quality and everything else. I was at a meeting one day with Caltrans people, and they said, I said, well, why didn't we do a baseline study on grazing? And you could have heard a pin drop. And this is an agriculture valley, and I expressed my concerns at that time. I said, that is flat not right, but it fell on deaf ears. Because the grazing is a big, big part of this. And it's Caltrans came out one time, they said, well, this is all new, it hasn't happened. I said, here, let me show you a map that's taken in 1952. And this is way out on Rosman's map out there. And I think it was either Mervin or Sully Pinches were baling hay out there. And this would have been, it's an aerial photo, and it's dated right on. I think it's the 14th of June in 1952. So there's been agriculture activities in this valley for years and years and years. So
I want to speak to that question also, that it's not just 10 to 15 years. This is perpetuity. This management plan goes forever. And so that's part of why it is this high. There's also 6 versions of it. They kept changing and changing and changing of it. And there's really, the final is 2 versions, and they don't agree with each other. So it's problematic on so many levels. And as far as how it got together, you know, I'm the way I kind of feel about it, it was sort of a cookie cutter thing. It's sort of like when you were in grade school and you had to make a report on Guatemala and you go to the encyclopedia and you pull out what's there. Well, Caltrans did this cookie cutter thing, like I was showing the Sinuous Creek, like imagining that that was appropriate here without really understanding the whole dynamic, kind of like what like John was saying, you know, parts of it, the whole way that it had been managed for the past 150 years. So, you know, the plan that they have, I agree with John. It's not appropriate for this valley.
I have a question about the air quality, especially during construction, especially during the construction time. There'll be a fair amount of dust created, especially along the athletic fields of the high school and the Little Lake League and so on. So with the rise of asthma and other respiratory ailments, I wonder whether there's any kind of study about the air quality.
I'd have to say no. And, you know, there's a whole lot of, you know, some of the people that read environmental impact reports, when they saw the original environmental impact report, saw that it was completely lacking in a lot of things. You know, some things like air quality would probably just be one little paragraph saying, oh, it's no big deal, insignificant, it's temporary. And what happens then? If anybody disagrees, you can write comments till you're blue in the face. And the agency says, well, we heard the comment, you know, fine. And then if you care about it, if you want to do something about it, you have to sue. That's our recourse. And it's a pretty broken system.
Thank you all so much. I just want to point out that it is a little bit after 4 o'clock. And if you would like to, you know, have comments, Cindy, do you? Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. Just want to let people who need to go. Thank you for being here, and let's, you know, just informally continue the discussion.
Yeah, I've got a question for anyone on the panel. Talk to me, tell us... how many wells are being proposed for this? This is not wick drains, but wells. Anyone know?
The only information that we have about that is that they, Caltrans, I believe in the bid package, suggested a figure of $175,000 for water development. So, in other words... whatever they can do with that amount of money, and that might be more, it might be less, but that was the suggested amount of funding that should be allocated or should be put into your estimate for your bid. But as far as I know, as far as any of us know, we don't have any concrete figures as to how many wells that translates to.
When we were trying to figure out if there was an impact of the use of water on the building the bypass, we came up with a number.
Yeah, I mentioned that before, that my calculation, being very generous, ballparky, but being very generous, said that it couldn't be more than about 200 acre feet per year. To compare that figure to something you might have a better feel for, the city of Willits water system uses about 900 acre feet per year. So we're talking about a fourth, roughly. And that, like I say, is a high figure. It's probably a lot less than that. You know, that's why I concluded that it's probably erroneous to throw out the idea that that is a significant problem and that we should base our critique of, you know, I want to say personally that I probably as much or more than anybody in this area am adamantly opposed to the bypass. And I think there are a lot of very good reasons for opposing the bypass. I don't think the argument that this is going to have significant impact on our groundwater is a valid argument, and I think it doesn't do us any credit to try to make that argument. I'd rather there we use very valid arguments and not that one.
At the same time, that's 25% more people, if you imagine that, and they could drill a well, and it wouldn't, as David said, it probably wouldn't impact the groundwater of the valley unless that well was right next to yours. If the construction company drilled a well and it was close to yours, it might have an impact depending on how much they pump out of it. So, yeah, it does. It's not something that would impact the groundwater generally, but maybe just in the neighborhood, same with the wick drains, right in the neighborhood there, it could impact. Am I correct about that, David?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
David agrees with that.
Hi. My question's really about the CEQA process. I guess I'm realizing I don't really understand it. You said that Oil Well Hill may in fact not end up being used as the site where the fill dirt's gotten from. Good English, right? So how does that affect the CEQA documentations that say that's where it is going to come from and that's where the studies have been done about how it's going to affect the landscape there? And as we talk about other things that don't seem to have been studied, how does that affect the legitimacy of these documents and how are they used to decide that the project is okay to move forward? Is the question clear?
Yeah, I could answer a part of that. You know, the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA, and the California Environmental Quality Act, CEQA, are informational documents for decision makers. They're not scientifically verified by peer review or research. And in most cases with governments, they write their own documents. In the case of Caltrans, for instance, they're the lead agency and the CEQA and NEPA compliance agency. They've been given that authority for federal funding by the Federal Highways Administration in a formal memorandum of agreement that they have between the two agencies, that Caltrans takes full responsibility for compliance with federal law. So that's just the way the system works. And when they do make a good faith attempt internally to comply with that, but they're a big agency and they stumble around, and I agree with John that sometimes they make some big mistakes and they seem not to, like Rosamond said, take local input very well. They just don't have the time. They're always. I visited some of the people that were working on this over in Marysville, and literally they're in this subterranean basement office that you wouldn't put a rat in, and they were moving to new facilities, but they do work under very stressful conditions. They have a lot of work. There were two people managing the entire mitigation plan for this project, plus all of Northern California, all other projects, just two people in Caltrans. So that's kind of the emphasis they put on it. If you go into their engineering department, it's a whole nother ball of wax. And, you know, they've got all the equipment and hundreds of engineers. And guess why? Caltrans is an engineering company. It happens to be owned by the state of California. So that's what they're here for. They're here to build roads and put in wick drains and listen to the locals and have their public informational meetings. And you can go to those and be you know, schmoozed by them. But they, and I think they do mean it. Don't get me wrong. I think they're sincere people. It's just that their system is like, what was it, Rosamond? You said it seemed to be broken.
Oh, broken.
Yeah.
Entrenched.
Well, you know, it's it it. So it's informational documents. So those that's why the Center for Biological Diversity, the California Farm Bureau, Willits Environmental Center, Sierra Club, and the Environmental Protection Information Center all filed the lawsuit in the federal court. And there are pending legal avenues for the public still. It's never too late. And in the judicial system. So fortunately, we have a free democracy, and you're allowed to exhibit that in court. And so I think there's still the NEPA and CEQA documents are done. There's no, you can't challenge those anymore. They're too old. They're 2006, I think they were certified.
Yeah, and so, you can't challenge the FEIR either.
Yeah, there's no legal recourse on that. But the other permits, you can.
Yeah, that kind of segues into my question, which is now that we're all fired up and more alarmed than ever about the bypass, what's our best chance of stopping it, and what needs to be done, and where do we go? And sort of going back to the beginning about the going to Sacramento and LA, can you go over that again and give us a little action plan so we can go out of here feeling not quite so powerless?
Well, I can just say my thing, but Cindy might want to say more. I kind of see it as a volley of arrows that we do absolutely everything we can think of, and one of them's going to hit. That's my hope. So I would encourage people to do anything and everything that they feel inspired to do, whether that's writing your legislator, whether it's writing a letter to the editor, whether it's going to Sacramento. There's certainly a pile of stuff on the table back there with ideas. Whichever one grabs you and you feel inspired, go for it. Yeah, the governor could put a quick stop to this, absolutely. So, yeah, but we have not been able to convince him. So media, all the politicians watch media, listen to media, so that's important. It's a kind of cumulative thing, talking to legislators, absolutely. So they read the news.
I think I'd like to add to that probably at this point our best chance is the snafu of the mitigation process. Right now, it looks as if there is no mitigation plan in place. It has not been approved. There is not a contract with a land manager. And this is a big problem for Caltrans. Whether or not they can smooth it over and put the pressure on the CTC to allocate the funds anyway is another question, but I think that is probably our best chance at this point, is to point out that particular problem and make sure that people don't turn a blind eye to it.
I had a more specific question about the wick wells. I don't fully understand how this is supposed to work. So is the idea that they wick water up with the purpose to compact the soil? So eventually they would presumably start wicking less over time. And then does that then create a underground dam, as Rosamond was discussing, for how when you put a dam in, you have this deep, what did you call that?
A key, yeah.
Will it act like a key then through that part of the valley?
I don't think so. I think if anything, it'll be wetter.
Really?
Yeah, because depending on, you know, rainfall and...
Well, that's what I was wondering. Would the rainfall coming from the western side tend to back up more on the other side of the...
Well, let's say you go through a period of wetter winters, then the wick drain will act as a... forever, as long as those plastic tubes are
functioning. So you think it will continue to wick even when after the ground is compacted under the
freeway? They're probably likely to get sedimentation and granules of sand and et cetera over time to get clogged up with clay, mm-hmm. and eventually they'll stop functioning.
But the compaction itself wouldn't prevent the water from flowing into
them. The compaction will, if it's successful, it will prevent or not prevent, but it will slow down the amount of water that comes into that area, into that compacted area. Mm-hmm. So, yes, that's why I talked about the dam
key. That's why they do it, right?
And that is exactly why they do it, because they want it. If you just put the fill dirt on top of the ground, it takes, you know, perhaps a couple of years for that to settle,
right,
and to compact on its own weight. The wick drains just make that process go faster.
Okay.
And probably one of the reasons they leave them in there is that in the ensuing years, as water comes in the wet period, any water that infiltrates there will be quickly drained out so that it will not fill up. It will not heave and cause problems for the road. That's okay. The way I understand it.
But you don't expect it to cause an overall change in the water movement in that end of the valley in particular?
It will have some impact, but the impact, I believe, after studying the water flow patterns and everything, mm-hmm. is probably going to be pretty minimal. You have to keep in mind that the alluvial fill underneath the freeway at that point is about 200 feet deep.
So this goes well below the
big tub of water that's underneath the valley, which is mostly the alluvial fill, is much, much deeper than that 85 feet. So water flowing underneath that is not going to be impacted by that. Now, most wells don't go that deep, so it's, you know, kind of irrelevant for them, but the water is not going to stop flowing altogether.
Thank you.
I have more of a statement than I have a question. I've lived in this valley for over 55 years. My family's been in this county for over 100 years. I've seen the discussion all the way back from the 60s to today. Went to the meetings in the 80s and in the 90s because I was interested in the bypass. For some reason, I believe economics in the 70s when Governor Brown was in there, that a lot of freeway building stopped. But what I want to say from my take on what I've read and what I've witnessed, the environmental community back in the, I'm going to say it could be late 90s, early 2000s, hired a consultant to come to Willits to make this a more, give them ideas on how to make this a more walkable community, less traffic flow, better flow. And I don't remember the gentleman's name, but when it came down to the nuts and bolts of it, he said, "You guys need a bypass. You need to get the people. You need to get this traffic off Main Street." While I disagree with a viaduct, I do agree with a bypass. I don't think we should have a viaduct in the county or in the valley because of earthquake problems and safety of getting emergency vehicles there in and out. And I've worked in highway maintenance for almost 20 years. The footprint where the bypass is a lot better than what I've seen in previous applications where you've had several scenarios, whether it's going up over where Brook Trails is or around the east side of the valley. And the reason being is we're skirting close to town with this bypass, leaving most of the valley untouched. And what that does is keep traffic out and preserve the basic bulk of the valley. I don't like the railroad, using the railroad for a bypass, because you're still putting it right down through the middle of town, right in between where all your festivities, whether it be the 4th of July or the car show or everything that you want to make this town where they'll be walking and bicycling and visiting these areas. You don't want to put a state highway right through that. It just wrecks it. That's a historic train station there. Someday it's still viable to have trains from Willits south, but it's not viable north. Most people know why. But it's still viable to have train service from Willits south. We want to conserve that. a quarter of a mile away where they're putting it now is a good footprint. I'd really like to see that go on an earth fill to make it safer with bridges over the top of your city streets and county roads and culverts, which I would call a box culvert or a fish wear type culvert, a more safe way to go. Wouldn't be round culverts or elliptical culverts like is in past highway designs. Really think about this. You're going to take on an agency that's going to have their lawyers. You're going to have your lawyers. They've already cut the footpath through here. I think the main fight would be to try to get rid of that viaduct. I believe it's an unsafe situation for this community. But other than that, that'll solve a lot of the congestion in this town. And later on, we can go for Highway 20 interchange to help it. We'll see what this does first. But I know from working for the County of Mendocino, and I'm not representing them here today, I'm representing myself, that when the highway was shut down north of town and there was a lady that had an accident and knocked down a power line and they diverted all the traffic, I was the one that set all the detour signs out in the valley. And I'll tell you, there was a lot of heavy semi-traffic out there, a lot of traffic, and a lot of people getting lost just trying to get around this town to get back on 101. It will relieve a lot of traffic. It really will. The design needs to be a little better, but it will relieve a lot of traffic, and the footprint is the right place for it. Thank you.
My name is Randy Dalton, and this is directed toward Mr. Ford, who's a cattleman. I heard from a friend of mine, Manuel, who was a worker here, that he fished 30 cows out of the oak trees during he was on a horse. His horse got blown out from underneath him, and he had to wrap his arms up in blackberry bushes to keep from being swept down because there was a barbed wire fence, and he didn't want to get caught in the barbed wire. And after the storm was over, they got 27 cows out of the oak trees that had been during a flood. And I don't know what the history is of how many times Highway 101's been flooded, but I know if you climb in a bathtub that's three quarters full, the weight of the rocks from this mountain and the soil's movement going into a tributaries, this is a basin, this is an inland delta, is going to cause the rest of the valley to be further and deeper in water. And the flooding, you're not going to remake Mother Nature. And nobody's talking about rain and wind. You chew up the mountain, the winds, you chew down the trees. The tree's canopy is what holds the water. The tree's canopy is what holds the wind. And as we cut more and more old growth, the storms are coming deeper, the hurricanes are coming, the tornadoes are coming. Nobody's talking about flooding, wind, and rain. Mother Nature always bats last. The costs. How many trillions of dollars are we in debt in the economy now? How is it that we can continue to spend millions? Well, my question is, you talked about grazing. Okay, this is all indigenous pasture land. I'm a small farmer. I'm not a big farmer. I'm a little lady. But I know organic, and I know crop rotation. These, you don't have to plant alfalfa every year. You can let the cows go. The horses, 169 horses. This is precious. This valley is precious and is irreplaceable. I don't care how much money they say. It's grand theft and larceny. You're stealing trees. You're stealing soils. You're stealing. It's a water grab. And, I'm concerned. I'm really concerned. This is no private citizen could do what these people are trying to do to our valley and to Mendocino. I've lived in Laytonville for 35 years. Where are they going? This is a scenic corridor. This is 10,000-year-old footpath. The salmon come from Outlet Creek, from Cobolo, 200 miles to Humboldt Bay. This is their habitat. This is where they're raised. You cannot replace what we have. It's irreparable. And I just think that we need to continue to raise the issues that are being raised here today. And I don't understand why the Farm Bureau dropped out. I don't know how much money you got paid for the land that you sold, but money is not God. God is God. And I think we need to give thanks and praise for Creator for having this beautiful valley with all its wildflowers and birds and wildlife that we don't even know.
thank you very much for all the questions, and thanks everybody for staying. If you have other questions, maybe informally, you can talk with the panel. Thank you, John Ford, for being here, and all the panelists. Fantastic. Thank you.